Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And I don't know what it's like where you guys are all over the world, but here in Arkansas, all of a sudden it decided to become summer. And we've gone into weather we don't normally have till July. Now, does that mean we're going to have a long, hot summer or what? I don't know. Of course, the weather all over the world is real strange right now anyway. Mm-hmm. But it's a little unexpected anyhow. Okay, well, as I've said before, our conference is coming up. We're going to have our it's called the Transformation Conference here in Arkansas, in Rogers, Arkansas. And that's going to be from June 18th to the 21st.
20th. Yes.
I've been getting all these tickets. That's why I might get the 21st in my head.
Everybody's going home.
Yes, and everybody's going home on that day. 18th to the 20th here in Rogers, Arkansas. And we've been having everyone as guests have been those that are going to be speakers on the show. As said before, we've got Lindsay Wagner this year, who is our keynote, and this is going to be fantastic. She has been in metaphysics all her life, but now she's decided, I guess in the last several years,
she's been doing it a long time.
But, you know, most of them don't want people to know because...
I think we just found her.
Probably. But that's the bionic woman. But, you know, a lot of them don't want people to know. But I think everybody's coming out of the closet now because it's becoming more and more common to believe in these things and talk about these things.
Mm-hmm.
Not like it used to be at all.
No. No, but she'll be doing exciting. She'll be doing a oneness blessing at the conference. So that'll be really exciting. I haven't ever experienced that, but the people that I've talked to who have, they say it's phenomenal, and she's excellent at it. So.
Well, we're going to give her 3 hours, and on that night she can go as long as she wants.
Right.
In her workshop.
Well, because she normally goes 5 hours is her minimum, so we thought, well, this is what we could do, and then if she has to go longer, she can.
Because it's the last speaker of the day,
mm-hmm.
and she's going to be on Saturday night.
Saturday night, yes.
Uh-huh. And then we have Daniel Brinkley is coming. And we're going to have him talk about his 3 near-death experiences, or really he said one of them, he actually died, because he was dead so long that he woke up in the morgue. And then the other 2 were near-death after that. But they made a movie about the incident, and we're still trying to get some of those movies to sell at the conference, but they were done in the late 90s, and they said they don't exist anymore. But everyone in the metaphysical field knows Danyon, and he's one fantastic speaker. And we've got several other really big ones here, and then we have all of our authors that are coming up.
Right.
So this is going to be a very exciting conference. And anyone who wants to find out more about it, and there's still some vendor space open.
A few. We're filling up very quickly. So.
Yeah, last year we had to turn vendors away. There were so many.
Mm-hmm.
And it is beginning to fill up. But if anybody's interested, check out our website, and that'll have how you can get a hold of us. And that is Ozark Mountain. It's Ozark Mountain Publishing, and it's abbreviated on the website, OZARKMT.com. Or you can call our 800 number, 1-800-935-0045. So right now we're home, so we're putting all our energy, we're geared toward getting ready for this conference. And we're expecting it to be even bigger than last year when we had Helen Reddy come from Australia. So people enjoy it. They said there's so much for everybody.
Yeah.
And they've told us before it's a tremendous energy that they can't explain.
Right, it's very magical.
They said it's something they haven't felt at any other conference.
Right.
So those that come are going to be in for a rare treat. Before I introduce my guest tonight, let me give out the toll-free number in case anyone wants to call in and ask questions. But try to keep the questions about the subject matter that we're speaking about rather than going off too far afield. Okay, the number to call in if you do want to ask questions is 1-888-815-9756. 1-888-815-9756. Okay, so now we'll bring on our guest. He's out in California. in St. Louis Obispo.
St. Louis Obispo. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, his name is James Walrow. Okay, James, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello. Thank you for having me.
You said you want us to call you Jim, don't you?
Jim is fine.
Okay. All right. Well, Jim is one of our new authors. His book is right now going to be coming off the press.
It's at the press right now.
It should be out probably about a week.
It'll be here. Mm-hmm.
Be here in plenty of time for the conference
anyway. We'll be here in time for the conference.
But his book was originally printed in England, so it was known over there. And now we're bringing it to the States. The name of the book is called Ask Your Inner Voice. And so we're going to be talking to Jim tonight about the book. But, Jim, before we get into what the book is about and everything, tell everybody about yourself.
Well, let me start in the
beginning. I always like to get background on people so they'll know who you are, you know, where you're coming from.
Okay. Again, thank you for having me on the show. Let me start at the beginning. I was born and raised in Rochester, New York. And from an early age, I knew that I wanted to be a lawyer. I ultimately went to Cornell Law School, and I became a lawyer. I began working in a major New York law firm as a trial lawyer, and I progressed to having my own firm in Los Angeles, and I ultimately ended up becoming a senior partner in a leading international law firm here in the United States. How I came to be involved in a subject such as Ask Your Inner Voice is that while I was trying cases, I often would have powerful intuitive experiences. I became interested in that, and I studied methods of learning about the powers of the mind. I've taken, for example, the Silva Mind course. I studied with the Inner Voice spiritual teachers. And I realized that very little is written about how to call on inspiration when you need it. I decided to write a book about it. I'm particularly interested in this subject because I'm a lawyer. Lawyers are not generally thought to be interested in intuition, but I can assure you that they all have it and they all use it, and very few of them talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I've gathered stories about the inner voice experience from people throughout history and regular people alive today, and I've collected them into this book, Ask Your Inner Voice, and I'm delighted to hear that it's going to be published in a week or so, and I can't wait.
Okay, because that's what I was thinking. A lot of people think it's strange. Usually lawyers are involved in the material, the physical. And how would you get over into metaphysics, the strange and the unknown? But like you said, you do rely on your intuition, don't you?
All the time. And I can give you a very quick example of it. When most cases are tried, a jury is selected. And when the jury is selected, the lawyers have a certain number of what we call peremptory challenges, which means that you can remove a juror from the jury pool for any reason. You don't have to give a reason. And on what basis are lawyers making these decisions about whether to remove a particular juror? They're doing it based on gut feeling. They're doing it based on intuition.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they'd be the last one to really admit that, wouldn't they?
Well, I think lawyers tend to be a bit conservative. They don't want their clients to think that they're flighty, and so they don't say anything about it. But you ask any lawyer if he relies on his gut feeling, every lawyer, particularly all the good ones, will tell you absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the name of the book is Ask Your Inner Voice, but when I was first reading it, to me it's like that still small voice, what we always hear about, the still small voice that's inside everyone. And I was going to call the book that, and then we found out there's other books out there with that title. But it's the same thing, isn't it, what we call the still, small voice?
Dolores, I think that there is a continuum in the human experience that starts at a very small level, perhaps with intuition, hunches, creativity, and then it moves into the spiritual, and it becomes the still, small voice.
Mm-hmm.
What I try to demonstrate in Ask Your Inner Voice is that not only can we be receptive to listening to the inner voice, but we can be proactive about it. We can actually ask the inner voice questions, and we can actually get answers. And that, I think, is what distinguishes this effort, Ask Your Inner Voice, from other efforts about the still small voice or about intuition.
Okay, because, you know, you said also we can call it the conscience. I don't think it's any difference, the conscience, the inner voice. Everybody has it, even though they just dismiss it and don't listen to it. Julie has become very accomplished at listening to hers. I think
if,
it's about the same thing.
If that's what it is, you know, I'm not sure. I'd need a little bit more. I think there's a fine line in there as to what it is.
Uh-huh. Okay, so what would you... You tell them what you mean.
Go ahead. Let me say something about conscience. In my study, I concluded that conscience really isn't the inner voice except at the very early stages. And the reason I say that is that every time we have a prompting from conscience, it's always negative. It always tells us what not to do, not what to do. My view of the inner voice is that it is positive inspiration from within. I think that the concepts of conscience include a lot of things that we get from social programming, from childhood, from school, things that might not necessarily be spiritual or even correct. Good examples of that would include the Inquisition, which at time was a societal norm. Apartheid is another one. So I think that conscience is kind of the springboard, but it's not the first step. I think the first step is hunches and coincidence and creativity and things on that line. So the way I see it is the inner voice is positive inspiration from within, and I kind of leave it at that.
Okay. That sounds kind of like what you deal with, or yours is a little different.
I think it's, I think there's a fine line. I think that's part of where I go, is that me, is that you, is that, you know, so I have tried to differentiate so much that I am not sure.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Uh-huh. Well, how do you explain intuition, Jim?
Well, I believe, as I say, that it is this positive inspiration from within. And I think the important point about intuition is to distinguish it from other inner messages that you get. Many of us, me included, have a running dialogue inside, and it frequently is negative, it's frequently criticizing, it's a critical voice. The trick is how to distinguish that voice from what I'm calling the inner voice, the positive inspiration from within. And the way I make the differentiation is that the inner voice is the one that is on your side, the one that is not criticizing you. And when I hear that one speak, I pay more attention to it than the one that is criticizing.
Okay. But in the book, you were saying, you had one question about how can people, some ways that people receive intuition, how do they know what it is?
I think intuition can be received in any way that approaches the five senses. It can be a vision, it can be seeing, it can be hearing, it can be feeling, it can be touching. The one that surprised me when I came across it was the one by the great Persian poet Rumi. He received inspiration from dancing. And in fact, in Turkey these days, the tradition of whirling dervishes comes from the study of his approach to inner voice things through dancing. So anything that relates to the five senses, I think, is where you can get an inner voice message.
I always think of the whirling dervishes, though. They get dizzy, and then they go out of it totally. You know?
Well, maybe it puts it takes them out of their normal sense that way, and
yeah,
then they can, it confuses them, and
it
they can get something.
Confuses the brain.
Confuses
okay.
the conscious mind.
Okay. But you said in the book you also tell how people can contact their inner wisdom.
Yes.
You have steps or something, or what?
Yes, I do. You know, in the past, when we wanted to understand something in our world, we went to science, and science deals with the five senses. My feeling is that the inner voice doesn't come through the five senses. It comes through the sixth sense. And the sixth sense, how is it that we can evaluate it and approach it and learn how to use it to ask the questions that we want to receive from our inner truth. And I've studied the issue as the social scientists have. What they have done is they have, instead of trying to do rigorous experiments about how does intuition work, because it's not one of the five senses and it's not scientific in that sense, what they do instead is they look at all the examples where intuition has occurred and they try to pull some sort of theory from the observations. And they call that grounded theory. That is, that the theory is grounded in the observations. I've studied the inner voice principles through the many people throughout history who've exemplified them, and I've developed a way to get into the process and to be able to ask your own inner wisdom the questions you want answered. The first step is to formulate your question. I think that questions that are useful in the world generally and into our own internal world are simple and they're clear and they're complete and they're unemotional. And if I had to summarize how to formulate a question you want to ask your inner voice, I would say think of it as a Google search. If you wanted to search something on the Internet, you would be simple. You would be clear. You would be complete. You would be unemotional. And when you hit the Enter button, you would want to come up with an answer. And I think that's the first step in trying to get an answer from your inner wisdom, to formulate the question.
The next you don't want to make it too complicated, because then you could have, some people want many questions in one. It's easier just to keep it simple, isn't it?
And definitely.
First.
And if you ask two questions in the same question and you get an answer back, how do you know which question it's answering? I mean, making it simple is the first step.
Mm-hmm.
The second is writing. Sorry?
Julie says in direct questions, too, that you're going to get a simple answer.
Well, I think it goes like with your Google search, you're trying to stay with keywords, and it's just right to the point. Yeah, keep it direct and keep it simple. So, okay.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
They always say, keep it simple, stupid. Don't confuse the issue here. But that's what a lot of people do. I think they try to make it too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true.
So you want them to start out with simple questions first, first they have to know what it is they're looking
that's
for.
That's the first step, is create your question.
Yeah.
It's got to be a simple question.
Yes, they have to know what they're looking for.
Right.
Okay, then what do you do after that, after you know what it is you want to ask?
I think the important thing then is to write the question down. I think a lot of people feel that they don't get an answer that answers the question, but if they write the question down, I think if they look back, they can see that, they really asked a simple question, and they got an answer that fits, but they may have forgotten the question if they didn't write it down.
Yeah.
So it fixes the question in your mind.
Yeah, that makes sense, then. That's what I do in my work. I'm always writing down what I have to ask the clients. Okay. All right, but then what do you want to do after that?
I think the next thing to do, particularly if you're asking a spiritual question, is to know in your heart that you are worthy to hear, that you're worthy to hear spiritual information coming from within. I think many people feel that their question is too insignificant, or that the spirit can't be bothered with answering this particular question. But in my mind, it's part of the human condition to be able to ask your inner self these questions, and that you are worthy to hear it, and that if you can say that to yourself, that you are worthy to hear it, you are worthy to ask the question and to get an answer, I think that's an important step.
Well, I think, a lot of people think that we've been taught, like through religions, that only the priests or the pastors are allowed to speak to God or speak to any higher wisdom or anything or receive spiritual things, and so that's probably still sitting in there. When people start getting, hearing things, and it's like, well, wait a minute, I can't have that. I can't be doing
excellent
that.
I'm not worthy.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
Some of the brainwashing we've been conditioned with all our lives, I guess,
Yes, and what parent doesn't want to talk to their children, and what parent doesn't want to listen to their children? Spirit can't be any different.
Right.
Okay.
Well, do you recommend meditation to receive the answers, or how do you go from the next step?
I'm glad you asked that, because that is the next step. You got to quiet your mind. And quieting your mind gets you into the alpha state, which is a state of wakeful relaxation. It's not necessary that you meditate, although many people do meditate to arrive at this place. I do myself. I know many other lawyers who do as well. But quieting the mind is important. How many people have we heard say, oh, I got this great idea in the shower? Well, your mind is quiet in the shower or driving on the freeway or walking in the woods. Anything that puts you in a state where you can get your mind quiet. I think part of this has to do also with not asking questions when you're upset or angry or frustrated, because your mind isn't quiet. It's focused on this other thing that's rattling around in your mind. So the important thing, the next step, is to quiet the mind, and that can include meditation.
Well, that's what I tell my clients about meditation. It doesn't have to be that deep meditation, because I work a lot with swamis and I speak at a lot of the ashrams, and that's real deep meditation. It doesn't have to be like that. Some of them think that's the only way. Just quieting the mind and quieting the body, it's so good for the body. To relax the body. That's all it has to be, just something simple.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
And they think it has to really work at it.
Perfect. I think that's important. You know, we always wonder, am I doing it right? Well, it's easy to do it right. And in fact, every one of us does it right every single day. And you know when that occurs? When we go to sleep.
Oh, when we go to bed. Yeah, when we go to sleep.
Yeah.
So we all know how to do this already. And it's just a matter of saying, how can I do this, go to the go-to-sleep sort of frame of mind, and yet remain awake? And after a few tries, it's easy to do.
Okay.
The next step is to actually ask the question, not just sit there and wait for something to happen, but to actually ask the question that you've written down, that you've framed. It's not necessary to speak it out. You can ask it mentally. But I would ask the question expecting an answer. And by that I mean having the desire to have an answer from your inner wisdom, having the expectancy that, you know, you've received intuitions and hunches and flashes of insight in the past. There's no reason why you can't experience that again. And to have the belief that you will actually receive the answer. And by the belief, I don't mean that you have to be rabid about it, but you have to at least 51% believe, I think, that you will receive an answer to the question that you're asking. After all, if you're a child of the universe and you're asking the universe a question, what parent would refuse a child asking a serious question?
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Of course, then people always say, well, how do I know it's really them and not just my imagination?
Well, we're getting to that, and
I think
that's a very important point. What you're raising is verification and discernment, and we're getting to that.
Uh-huh.
I think the next step, once you've asked the question, is to kind of wait.
Mm-hmm.
Listen intently and patiently, and I like to liken this to fishing. When you go out and you go fishing, you throw the bait out, and what do? You wait. You might let your mind wander. You might think about other things. But if you're in this calm, restful state and you wait, sooner or later, something is going to come to you. And as soon as it comes to you, and that's the next step, pay attention to whatever you get. And I want to emphasize this one, because many of the answers that we get are so simple and yet so profound that we kind of dismiss them. They sort of fly right by us.
Uh-huh.
I have a friend who is a runner, and the friend started to, had been running for many years, you know, every day, and started to develop heel problems. And then it got worse and worse and worse, and at a point she basically had difficulty walking. She went into meditation and asked her inner voice, what can I do to help with this problem I'm having with my heels? And the answer she got was, better shoes would help. Now, how simple that is. How profound that is. And she went out and she got better shoes, you know, the ones that are for people with heel problems, and it resolved the problem. Ultimately, her heels healed, and she's doing fine now. But paying attention to whatever you get, I think, is very important.
I think maybe people think they're going to get something very profound, and if something is simple, then it can't be right. If they say, well, I knew that already or something, it's in their mind.
Right. I think that's 100% right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's making that connection and realizing, I mean, but that's where people already knew that. Well, that's because you're connected. You know, that's your guidance already. So.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So they always say, why do you have to ask somebody else? We all have all the answers within us, really.
Yes. I think my view of the inner voice is that it's kind of always on. And all we really are doing is removing our blocks to receiving that information that's always on. I mean, it's like when we're doing any automatic exercise, when we're walking or swimming. It's automatic. We're not thinking, now I got to put one arm over the next as I do this stroke. It's kind of automatic. I think it's the same way with the inner voice, that if we can be open to it and remove the blocks to it, we will get this kind of steady flow of simple and profound information.
Okay.
The next step I would take once I did pay attention to whatever I got and I did write, understand its simplicity and profundity, I would write the answer down. We talked in the beginning about writing the question down, and now I want to talk a little bit about writing the answer down. And the reason I think it's important to do that is to see what the connection is between the question and the answer. I don't know if you remember as a child playing the telephone game where one person at the start of a line is given a phrase, and then they pass it to the ear of the next one, and the ear of the next one, the ear of the next one, and the last one speaks out loud what it is that they've heard. It's always totally different than what it is that, as it originally started. That's why I think it's important to see if you can match the question and the answer, and the way to do that is writing the answer down. I have had situations with intuition, particularly when I would get messages that made absolutely no sense to me, and I realized, looking back at what my question was, that they made perfect sense. And I think it's important to be able to make that match. That's why writing the answer down is the next step I'd recommend.
Okay,
I think we get to the point now of verifying the answer, and I think it's absolutely critical to verify the answer. And Dolores, this is something that you mentioned before. How do you know whether the answer that you're getting is the correct for you and right for you? I think it's important
to
verify the answer and not your imagination.
Yeah.
And I think the way to do that is to kind of ask two different questions. The first question is, what is the source of this message? Is it my inner voice or is it just my mind? The second is, do I understand the message as it was intended? Going back to the source of the message, is it my inner voice or just my mind? I think there are two ways to kind of break that down. The first way is, am I detached from the result? In other words, am I pulling for one answer or the other? The example I use for this is, it's okay for me to have this double scotch, isn't it? Well, I've already got the answer in mind, so the inner voice is not going to help me out with that one. So the first one is detachment. The second is, what did the message feel like? I think a lot of people get messages that involve guilt or fear or judgment or demand or flattery. I don't think those messages are from your light within. And what I feel is, what if the spirit, if you knew that spirit was actually speaking to you, what would that feeling be like? Well, I think you would feel like you were being one with the universe. You would feel loved. You would feel accepted. And if that is the feeling you have, I think you're right on the source of the message. I think the second aspect of that is, if I got the message, I wrote down the question, I wrote down the answer, I'm convinced that the source is right. Did I understand the message as it was intended? And I think there are two parts to that, too. I think the first one is, does the message imply harmlessness to me and to everyone around me? I don't think that spirit is in the harm business. So if you're getting a message that says harm, I think there's something wrong with it, and I would distrust the message.
Yeah, that's what I found in my work. It never wants to hurt the person. It's always for the highest good of the person.
Absolutely.
So that's one way I think you could tell the difference.
Absolutely. I think the second aspect of that is, we have two sides of the brain, the right side and the left side. After the inner voice session is over, I would go to the left brain and be very practical. Does this message seem practical? Is it sensible? We know that all truth is both practical and sensible. And I think that's the second test of whether I understood the message as it was intended. So when you get the message and you have it written down and you are at the point of deciding, do I follow this message? The important thing is, do I understand the source of the message? Is it from the right place, or is it just from my mind or from my own emotional state? And second, did I understand the message as it was intended? And I think those tests will get one to a spot where they can say, I can try this message because it passed all the tests, and the ultimate test is to trust it, to try it out. And the more you trust, I think the more the blockages to receiving the inner voice are dissolved.
Absolutely. I had a question, Jim. One of the things I found as I started getting messages is, because in part of that discernment thing or trying to just understand it, I started noticing that I would have about three sources of confirmation, like within a day, of different ways. Somebody would say something to me, or I'd hear something on the radio, or it would just be something just out of the blue would confirm. It would reinforce what I heard. And to me, that was a way of validating or confirming. And so it was a way for me to know, yes, that is what I understood. And that was part of my path to getting to the trust point that you're talking about.
Yes, I think you're 100% right about that. That's a very good description of how to have an additional verification, really, of what you're, the path that you're on, what you're doing, what you're following is the correct thing. One of the things that I've been doing with the love of my life whenever we go out to a restaurant is to ask first before we go out, which restaurant should we go to? And I find almost invariably that when we go to the restaurant, something happens. We meet someone, someone that has something to say to us or something that has something to hear from us. And it always seems to work out that way. So we use that as a verification technique as well. Good point.
Rather than just the one that fulfills your stomach desires?
Well, that.
Okay. Well, Julia does this all the time, so she's learned to trust it, and she's learned how to discern.
Yeah, I think what was messing me up earlier, whenever you were asking me if this was the same thing, well, I call it them, but I also see it as my higher self. And I think it's just terminology. I think it's all exactly the same thing. It's just tapping to that higher wisdom, higher knowledge and stuff. But it's, like you said, it's part of you. I see it as that. It went through the same process as what you're talking about. Until now, like you said, you get to trust it and all the barriers go. So now I just have a dialogue. It doesn't have to go through a process or anything. It's just you just ask a question, they answer it, and there you go. So.
I think that's an advanced state, and I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the trust factor is in there, too.
Right, the trust is a major part. When I finally started trusting, that's when I noticed that it really, a lot of blocks just started falling away very quickly.
They're becoming more often, too.
Right.
And
better.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, you weren't sure either.
No, I was doing exactly like you're saying, and I was questioning all over the place, and I kept going, okay, is this you or is this me? And then I heard, okay, when it's us, you're going to hear it over here, and when it's you, you'll hear it over here. And it was like, and I way I understand is the discernment part, that's very human, and that's very natural, and I think it's very healthy to go, wait a minute, who is this I'm talking to?
Lawyers get this in a very special way, this kind of discernment. Every person whose job it is to speak as part of their job has had the experience of starting their speech, and what comes out is totally different than what they thought. They hear it as it's coming out, and they say, that's pretty good, and I'll go with it. They're trusting it. And we've all had the experience of seeing speech presentations like that. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech is like that. John Kennedy's Ich bin ein Berliner speech was like that. The Patrick Henry Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech, which was extemporaneous, by the way, was like that. That somewhere deep from within you, this inner force is giving you the words. And if you are following your inner voice, we realize it's happening, and you go with it, magic happens.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this happens every time I do lectures, too. Mm-hmm. It comes from somewhere. That's what I always say. The worst lecture is one where somebody stands up there and reads, because that's fun. You know, that's not spontaneous.
Yeah.
You know, I want them just to talk, and then these things
do come
out. Yeah,
because then it's forced to come from there, from your heart. And from, Mm-hmm.
Because you have the information, you just have to talk about it. You don't want to read it. That definitely doesn't have this spontaneity or this deep wisdom that you're talking about.
Something else that seems to happen when you're in that zone, if you will, is that the words that you're speaking often have an impact on the audience in ways that you could never intend intellectually or logically. Sometimes there seems to be a glow around the whole experience. You were talking earlier about the feeling that happens at the transformation conference. It's that kind of thing. When that's happening, you know that spirit's at work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. People said they feel it. They said, even from our first one, they felt just magic there.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we kept saying, okay, how do we do this again? And every year they say, it's here. It's every year. So we're like, okay. we're just doing what we can. And it's everybody coming together and
maybe positive, and they all want to learn something. But they all say it's just different than any one they've gone to.
Right, right.
So anyway, it's positive. That's the main thing.
I know that we put it on from our hearts.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe that carries through anyway. Okay, you have one on your list of questions here. What does the inner voice sound like? I think you've already answered that, really. And Julie has learned it.
Well, I'd like to hear what other people, how they hear it, because it's changed over time. So.
Yep. Mm-hmm. What do you think the inner voice sounds like that you want to tell people so they would know?
Again, we've talked before about the critical voice in your head, and we've talked about the inner voice, which is the positive, the better feeling one. There is a success coach out there whose name is Michael Neal, and I think he has a perfect expression of how to tell whether the voice in your head is the inner voice or whether it's the critical voice. Which one is the inner voice? And his remark is, it's the voice in your head that doesn't think you suck.
doesn't think you suck. Okay. Well, that's what
I
found.
Well, you're okay.
Yeah, in my work,
exactly.
It always says it loves you. No matter what you do, we love you, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
It's like a mother with a child, you know. Mm-hmm. They always love their child, no matter what horrible things they do and what messes they get into. You still love them anyway.
And that is the person to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I'm just looking on the list of questions you sent me, because I think a lot of this, you know, we know these things, and I'm trying to think of the people out there who haven't discovered this yet, you know.
Or in the middle of it, you know, because with the awakening right now, I think this is happening. A lot of people don't even realize what it is. And, you know, I think, and one of the things that happens is, like in the book, you're saying, you know, one of the things you ask is, am I crazy? Because that is a natural question, because you start hearing voices, and what are we always taught about people who hear voices?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
I've heard over the last several years, they said, the psychiatrist said they're going to have to change the definition for schizophrenia, because schizophrenia was always people hearing voices, and they said too many people hear voices now with channeling and all the things that are going on that are perfectly normal people, so they're going to have to change the definition of schizophrenia.
For sure. Being a lawyer, it's easy for me to understand how people in mainstream don't want to be forthcoming about this kind of experience, the inner voice experience. But look back in history. There have been all kinds of people who have had these experiences throughout history. Let me name a few. Abraham, Moses, Buddha,
yeah.
The Oracle of Delphi, Socrates, mm-hmm. Jesus, Mohammed, Francis of Assisi, Joan of Arc, Michelangelo, Martin Luther, Bach, Mozart, Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr. You know, it's interesting that almost every major religion in the world was founded by someone who believed that God was speaking to them through their inner voice.
Uh-huh.
And those religions have been followed by billions of people. So it's not such a crazy thing.
But the one problem with some of the religions, they teach that they're the only ones that can do it, and not the average Joe Blow on the street can't do it, but yet we know it. Anyone can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just have to learn to listen to it.
I think that's the big advance these days. You hear many people saying, I'm not a religious person, but I'm a spiritual person. And
yes,
all that they're really saying there is that I don't need an interface between me and spirit. I don't need a clergyman. I don't need a guru. I don't need a prophet. I can go directly. And I think, first of all, I think that's true. And secondly, I think that it's happening more and more these days.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we see it a lot in our work because, you know, I have clients coming from all over the world, and when I give the lectures, there's so many people there. I can tell it. You know, we know, we call it the awakening. It's like the veil is being lifted. Everyone is really understanding this, and it is more spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the religion where it's just enclosed in a box with rules and regulations, and you have to do it this way. And so now they're finding out, they're more free about it. It's opening it up.
Well, it's about connecting with that voice, with that higher self. That's what the whole thing is about.
The higher self.
Your own guidance.
That's what we call it, the higher self, you know, the higher consciousness. But it is all the same thing.
Yes. Yes, completely.
One of the other questions here you had was, what happened to you when you followed your inner voice, and what happened when you ignored your inner voice? Do you want to give us some examples?
Okay, I can do that easily. The best example I can think of also talks about this quieting the mind thing. It's not always necessary for your mind to be quiet to get an inner voice message. And the example I would use for this, and this one is in the book, is I was coming home from work one day, and I pulled into the garage underneath the, I was staying in the city at the time, underneath my apartment condominium complex, and following me into the garage was a young gentleman with a pistol.
Uh-huh.
And he pointed the pistol at me and said, in a more colorful language than I'll use right now, he would like to have the watch on my wrist. Well, I know enough to giving someone the watch is fine with me, you know. Have it with my blessing. You know?
Right.
But,
yeah.
But after I gave him the watch, he said to me, lie down in the back of the car.
Oh.
And right then I got the flight response, because I'm thinking, if this guy gets me in a position where I can't defend myself, is he going to shoot me?
Absolutely.
And my initial reaction was to fight. As soon as that happened, I got a calm feeling saying, do what he says. He just wants to make a clean getaway. So I did what he said, and he ran away.
Wow.
And I was completely unhurt, and the watch was gone, and that was fine with me, too, because I thought it was pretty ugly.
But there you were given two choices of a message, and you could have taken each one, and the results would have been different, probably.
Well, like you're saying, the flight was the body. That was the conscious mind, because that came from fear.
That would be the conscious mind. So that's how you've learned to tell the difference, isn't it, if there's two messages?
Yes, that's true. And one was with fear, and as Julia said, and the other was this calm, peaceful, beautiful feeling. That's the one I went with. And it happened in less than a tenth of a second.
Wow.
Both of those things.
That seemed like an eternity, I bet.
It did.
Oh, I bet.
It did.
Time stopped, probably. Well, I would have for
There's another example use about this book itself, Ask Your Inner Voice. When I was writing the book, I started with a chapter on conscience. And the conscience is, you know, it's not that interesting. Who wants to open up a book reading about conscience, you know? And I kept asking my inner voice, what is it that I can do to liven this up or make this more interesting in the beginning? And ultimately, I got the answer, start the book with the second chapter. Brilliant. Brilliant. You don't have to start at the beginning. Brilliant.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. That's what we did.
Yeah. Well, I've written 15 books, and they write themselves, really.
I was
going
to say, you get guidance all the time about how to put them together. And
how to move it around. And when I thought the book was finished, and it was like oh, no, there's some more information coming. And I've done that with other people's books that we published, too. I'll look at it, and I'll say, no, this needs to be moved around. And sometimes the authors don't like it. They say, we don't want you to carve up our baby here, mm-hmm. but if they listen to me, it turns out to be a good book.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we get intuition all the time with our company and everything, and we've learned to listen to it. Mm-hmm. It's usually right.
It's always right.
Oh, okay, not usually. It's always
right.
Always
right.
Julie says we put it out there, what we need, what we want, and then we release it, and then we just sit back and watch the magic.
Well, a comment you made about not being attached to the outcome, that's a very important part of that whole process. So,
mm-hmm.
anyway.
Just let them take it and do with it and mm-hmm. make it happen.
Right.
Yes, I think it's also important while you're going through this process to realize that the answers aren't going to come to you to kind of solve your problems without you doing anything situation. You have to do the work.
Yeah.
I had a situation once when I was deeply into trying out the inner voice approach and procedure, and I had to go to court one day and attend an argument. And I thought, well, why don't I just wait until the inspiration comes to me about what to say when it comes to be my turn? And I was prepared, but I figured I'd just wait. I waited until I heard what the inner voice had to say. And the other fellow got up and made his presentation, and the judge turned to me and said, do you have anything to say on behalf of your client? And at that point, I realized that it's my job to do the work. I can get the intuition, but it's important that I do the work, too.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Jim, that beep meant there's a caller on the line. Don, is there a caller there you want to put through?
Yes, this is Dale from Florida.
Yeah.
What
do you want to ask?
Well, Jim, I wanted to ask, I am really waking up to what you're saying as far as, you know, opening up this consciousness and letting our inner voice come out. Matter of fact, my the way I start off is literally washing dishes. I just let my mind go. And while I'm washing those dishes, I'm able to communicate in a way that's, I don't know how else to explain it other than I feel like I'm making some sort of a connection, and I'm able to voice. Sometimes I just start talking, and I don't feel it's myself talking. But something else that I just started here 2 weeks ago, and it's something like, it is exactly like Neil Donald Walsh does. It's phantom writing. I'm finding now that my right hand is a conduit.
Yes, that's a good example, Dale. There are people who get inspiration and intuition that way, in sort of an automatic writing or some their own thought process involved. Doing the dishes and letting your mind wander and getting information is perfectly consistent with everything I feel about the inner voice.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you really struck on something. I think tonight what's sticking in my mind is the intuition. And you said lawyers, when you're up there and, you know, giving your speech and addressing the juries, I identify with that. I feel like I've had this for a very long time, and I just never knew it. I just assumed everybody else had this. But my mother used to teach me something like, she says, well, it's that little birdie always told me. And I think my mother always had it, and I just, you know, by blood, I got it too. But I have been so in tune with this throughout all my life that it has kept me out of trouble.
That's outstanding.
You know, I just want to say thanks. you know, for what you've done. And Dolores, you're also responsible for initially waking me up here last November. And I got to tell you, things have just, the things that are opening up to me now are incredible. And I'm not going to take any more of your time to explain it, but I just want to say thank you to everyone and thank you to the Ascended Masters and those that look out for me right now, because I know what my mission is coming. My mission is coming soon.
Wonderful.
I know what it is.
That's wonderful. Well, thanks for calling in tonight. I think Jim appreciates it, too. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Dale.
Keep doing what you're doing, all of you.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Enjoy Florida.
Okay. All right. Well, we're coming down to the line here. But on the... And you were talking here about examples that you give in the book about where God was speaking to other people. But these are well-known people, aren't they?
Yeah, the ones he was listing.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. Do you have any other stories you want to bring in on that before we close? Any stories about other people?
Let me do it in a little bit different way.
Okay.
I've had an experience recently with the love of my life, which illustrates a point that... many people don't appreciate about intuition, and that is you can do it together with someone else. If you are closely connected with someone and you go through the steps that I've talked about, and you write the question down, you agree upon what the question is, and then you separately or together at the same time ask your inner voice what the answer to that question is, if you get the same answer, and we have frequently got the same answer in the same words, that is the thing to do. And we recently had this experience where we're thinking about putting a solar installation on our house. And, of course, it's expensive and which one to get. And so our questions were, do we do the solar installation? Do we do it with the contractors that we're talking about? Which of the three options for price, et cetera, do we choose? And do we negotiate a discount? And we got virtually the same answer on all of those questions. So
We're
doing it.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, see, that's good. You're trusting it. That's the most important part, is trusting it.
Right.
Instead of sitting around questioning it, then you question it to death, and you don't do it then.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then the stupid conscious mind comes in, which doesn't know anything, and takes over, and it usually makes all the mistakes. Okay. Well, Jim, we're coming down to the time. An hour has flown by very quickly. But if somebody wants to get a hold of you and communicate with you, do you have a way that they can do that?
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. I do have a website. It's www.activateintuition.com. That's Activate, A-C-T-I-V-A-T-E, intuition, I-N-T-U-I-T-I-O-N.com, www.activateintuition.com. And if they go to that website, there is a way on the website to get a free chapter from the book, to get an illustration of what we're talking about the inner voice, so that they can decide whether they'd like to purchase the entire book in the next couple of weeks when it's available through both Amazon and Ozark Mountain.
Okay. So Activate Intuition is all together. There's no spaces in that.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. All right. And we want to remind everyone that Jim is going to be a speaker at our Transformation Conference, which is going to take place in just another few weeks.
3 weeks from today it starts.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Countdown.
We're in the countdown now. June 18th to the 20th in Rogers, Arkansas at the John Q. Hammond Center. It's the biggest venue in Arkansas, and we're hoping to fill that place.
We're not hoping.
We know we're going to fill it.
It started with believe, and then somebody said, no, you got to know.
We have to know. And so they're already signing up, and we said we have a few more vendor spaces left. If anybody out there wants to call, they're going to have to do it pretty quick, though, because that is filling up.
Mm-hmm.
But anyone wants to find out about it, you go on our website, Ozark Mountain. OZARKMT.com has all the speakers on there, and what they're going to be talking about, and all the information about the conference is on our website.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Registration, everything you need is right there.
Everything's right there. Mm-hmm. So it looks like, Jim, in just a few weeks, we'll be seeing you here in Arkansas.
Well, I look forward to that. And let me say that one of the things that I'm very impressed about Ozark Mountain is the calmness of the people in the organization, which to me says that there is a great deal of spirit working in that organization.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, because sometimes we feel like pulling our hair out. But
some people have said we're the most laid-back people they've ever met. It's just all we know how to be, I guess.
Yeah, but it goes, everything flows.
It does.
And it just always, we trust them to to make it happen, and it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have our hiccups, though, Jim. So.
You know,
thank
we
you very
all...
much. Pardon?
We all have
yeah.
problems, and the way we respond to them is a good indication of what's going on in our psyches. And
yeah.
I like the mellow feeling of what's going on with you guys. And I want to thank you again for not only publishing the book, but also having me on this interview. And I look forward to seeing everyone in Rogers.
Absolutely.
Okay. Because many of the people, the speakers, our authors, have never spoke before audiences before. So this is what we do to give them a chance to get out there. But, Jim, you're an old hand at it. You've been speaking before, you know, trial juries. And
that has to be the toughest audience.
Yeah, she said that's the toughest audience there is, probably.
Well, you're raising the bar on me now. I better be good at this thing.
Well, this should be a piece of cake anyway. It's not going to be a jury sitting there judging you.
You'll be fine. We have very nice audiences.
Okay.
Good.
Very loving. Yes.
All right. So I want to thank you for being on tonight. And I want to thank everyone out there for listening tonight. So good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.